Yeah, we're running through some kind of generic royalty-free video game.
Welcome back to TYT, guys. Brett Ehrlich, Kim Horcher with you. Me too. I'm here. I'm back. Anna Kasparian. We're going to have an awesome show. And I'm excited. Are you guys excited?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'd like to apologize for underdressing today. We were shooting something else in the morning that was movie themed.
But you still have to dress up for it.
Not for that. It was a movie discussion.
You don't have to dress like casual for movies.
I wore my shirt from Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, then the people who watch this on the internet will know that I like movies. I bought a number of shirts. Mm-hmm. The other ones being ones from the movie Real Genius. Mm-hmm. That say Surf Nicaragua and the International Order for Gorillas. And these are the things that in the movie online space, you just have to kind of wear to tip your hat to the audience. That like
you don't have to, though.
Yeah.
What's your necklace? What is your necklace?
It's
what is
a phoenix.
From what?
It could be from Harry Potter. It could just be a phoenix.
It's from Harry Potter. We had this discussion earlier. How are you?
I'm great. I'm not wearing anything interesting.
You are, though.
I'm just wearing a dress that I bought from Express like 3 years ago.
But I like that's the colors, it. Though.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's finally warming up. So, except not in the office where we always have the AC blasting at a very uncomfortable temperature. So, anyway. Let's do some stories. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Many are applauding New York for being the first state that has created a free tuition program for its state colleges. Now, this wouldn't only affect community colleges, it would also have an impact on four-year institutions. And so on its face, it seems like it's a great idea. And Andrew Cuomo has been applauded by a lot of people as he's simultaneously giving himself a pat on the back. However, you need to take a little more of a look, a deeper dive into what's being referred to as the Excelsior Scholarship. Strange name.
Excelsior.
Right. Stanley, not involved.
Yeah. Rigid Airship Excelsior.
To see that there are some pretty significant issues, and it could actually end up being far worse for poorer students in the state. So let me give you the details. Now, it's expected to cut the cost of a degree from a four-year State University of New York College, so that's a SUNY, now almost $83,000 for tuition fees and room and board, by about $26,000 for an eligible family making $100,000 a year. That is a substantial reduction, but still means paying about $57,000 over 4 years. Also, there are a bunch of caveats to this because not everyone qualifies, okay? So to qualify, students must attend school full time and be on track to graduate within 2 or 4 years. Not a lot of students actually finish in 2 or 4 years. At the state's community colleges, more than 90% of students would not qualify for free tuition based on those requirements. Even at its four-year colleges, 60% would be ineligible. So there are problems because, look, before this passed, Cuomo had to negotiate with some lawmakers, many of which were Republican lawmakers. And so there were a lot of requirements that weren't included in this policy until Republicans got involved. And now all of a sudden, these requirements are written into the law. And so look, it will help some people. And I think that it's important that tuition is on some politicians' radar and they want to do something to solve the problem. However, this has many holes, this has many flaws, and it could end up being way worse for some students. So what those students most need help with, living expenses, books, and fees, will actually not be covered by this program. That's according to reporting by the New York Times. The chancellor for SUNY says, if you're really concerned about students who are not attending because of the reality or perception of unaffordability, this is not the way to help them. This is going to cost money and it will make some parents happy, but I don't see it moving the accessibility needle. Also, if you go to one of these institutions in New York and you do qualify and they do pay for your tuition, keep in mind that you must stay in the state for as many years after you graduate as you took advantage of that program. Now, the idea behind that is, well, the state is investing in you and we want to make sure that you invest in the state. But that could have a very negative impact on many people who are trying to get an education in something that has a big market in a different state. So for instance, if you're interested in working in Silicon Valley and you're getting a degree that would help equip you for that, well then you're not able to leave for up to 4 years as a result. These are all the flaws. There are more, but I wanted to give you guys a chance to jump in.
Right. This looks like it puts more. It seems like an unemployed person who cannot find work in state is valued above someone who would go find a job maybe in New Jersey or Connecticut or somewhere nearby. And it's like you said, it does seem to be overplayed how much it would be helpful or making college more accessible to people because it is a last dollar program. So it kicks in after grants, after scholarships, and it only applies to these people under these conditions. I would love to see college for all, but this isn't really it. It's under that guise, of course.
It's hard for me to get upset at a program that essentially is lowering the burden for anyone. There will be individuals who have a lower financial burden for attending schools. So I don't want to I don't want it to seem like I'm complaining about this program, because the instinct to do it, the fact that it got through government, which my working theory is government literally has to do nothing except maybe pass budgets. Like, you can just do nothing and it will be fine as long as you have like the right message about why nothing happened. But in this situation, we do have a law passed, and I understand fully. Like, on one hand, I want to say there's worse states to be stuck in for 4 years than New York, but there are cheaper states to be stuck in than New York. So in order for you to live in the kind of place, you could be giving up a higher paying job out of state.
Yeah.
But I do understand, like, things I want this to start addressing that isn't addressed is why the cost of education is so high in the first place.
Yes, absolutely, right? So Band-Aids for a huge problem is not the right way to go about this. And look, I get what you're coming at, and I know that I will appear to be, you know, whiny and complaining about a really big problem that there's only a small solution for, but I don't care because I'm tired of settling. I'm tired of my taxpayer money going toward private contractors and weapons manufacturers for wars, as opposed to helping create opportunities for our people, right? So I want free tuition at public institutions, period, okay? I don't want all of these ridiculous caveats, like you need to stay in the state, your family needs to make $125,000 or less. Guess what? This is New York, okay? Most people, a lot of people, probably make a little more than that because that's what you need to survive in New York. And even so, this assumption that if your parents are making a certain amount of money, well, then they're gonna help you with your tuition. That's not necessarily true. There are a lot of parents that have no interest in helping their kids pay for college. And so a lot of kids are out there on their own trying to make ends meet, which is why they have to work. And so if you're saying that one of the standards or one of the qualifications is that you have to take a full-time, you know, load of classes or else you don't qualify, well then what happens to the poor students who are, you know, are socioeconomically disadvantaged and they have to work just to put food on the table and to take care of themselves?
Right, because you're not paying for their cost of living. You aren't paying for their school supplies or, you know, what those three things that you listed. And so they are going to have to find a way to make those ends meet, which will involve working. Now, I understand that there is a level of work that needs to be done. I just think that another limitation on the state of New York is this is a state program. Mm-hmm. The solution does seem like it makes more sense on a federal level.
They're only doing it, like a Band-Aid, because there's no way this is going to happen on the federal level. So the impetus now is on states. And I do want to point out some states do have a similar two-year program to this, like Tennessee, that don't have the you have to stay here rule tacked onto it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of my fears is that he worked with Republicans, Cuomo did, and Republicans signed on to this, right? And of course, Republicans have no interest in helping the American people. They don't have any interest in helping with educational opportunities. They don't. Maybe some do, but it's just interesting that this was a very liberal policy until Republicans get involved. And then you have all of these ridiculous caveats, right? That actually ends up helping less people. But they want this to be the model on a national level. And I don't want anyone to be fooled into thinking, oh, this is good enough, we should settle for it. No, this is not good enough, not even close, okay? It still shifts a lot of the economic burden onto the students, okay? And that shouldn't be the case when we have state institutions that our taxpayer money goes toward. I want my taxpayer money to fully fund these schools to the point where students don't have to worry about that tuition. And I also want to address the fact that tuition is ridiculously high right now, because because colleges continuously compete with one another to build nicer buildings and attract more students, right? That's one of the biggest problems that no one talks about, right? It's this constant circle jerk talking about like, oh my God, we have the best facilities, we have the best this, we have the best that. And they're constantly building, right? So they can get on that stupid US News and World Report ranking thing. Get over the ranking, okay? Are you providing a quality education? I don't care about your buildings. As long as they're not falling apart and as long as they're not dilapidated, I don't care. I just want affordable opportunities for people so they can get a higher education. By the way, sorry, I know that was a long-winded argument. I want to give you actual numbers to show you how many people would benefit from this because it's actually relatively small. Let's go to graphic 6. SUNY estimated that only one fifth of its undergraduates or 80,000 students would qualify for the program. The numbers are smaller at CUNY where 3,000 to 5,000 would qualify or a small percentage of the total student body. Also, there was a statement today from CUNY and the student body there. And here's what they had to say. We don't have a graphic for this, but I just want to read it. The Excelsior scholarship is a smokescreen for a backdoor tuition hike that will fall on the neediest students. To maintain eligibility for the scholarship, students must take 30 credits per year, which means 5 classes per semester, more than a full-time load, or impossibly for students who must work to provide for their families or care for children. In addition, students must maintain a GPA to be determined by each college for every one of those 5 classes. Those who do not qualify for the Excelsior program will be burdened with a $1,000 tuition hike with no increase in financial aid.
And they could just kind of raise tuition anyway. Because the idea being like, you start, you operated at a certain level with a certain price before this happened. Mm-hmm. There is a subsidy that comes in. Now you can just raise the tuition by that subsidy. And you already were at kind of an equilibrium anyway. Now you've just injected more money into the system that you can pocket and build buildings with. But we just talked to Jason Rubin about the state of the buildings at CUNY.
He said CUNY.
And he says they're not that great. They're not that great. The buildings aren't that great. They're good schools.
Yeah, and look, here's the thing. State institutions usually, like, they don't have the resources to play that game, right? But oftentimes when we talk about tuition hikes, a lot of it has to do with schools getting underfunded, right? Which is a huge problem, especially during the recession. That's like the first thing that politicians want to cut funding for, schools. And then you couple that with some of the other schools wanting to compete with one another. So they do spend a lot of money updating their facilities when they don't even necessarily need to be updated. So that's another problem. But look, this is a very complex issue that they keep trying to find very small solutions to. And it's not enough. It's just not enough. And I don't want people to be forced to take a full-time load because a lot of people do have to work. I don't want people to be forced or confined to a specific location for their jobs. Think about the ramifications on your career path if you're forced to stay in one place for 4 years.
So yeah, I would. If I'm being cynical, you say it's not enough. Mm-hmm. It's Passover, Dayenu, it would have been enough. I would like to be positive about this anyway. But if I'm cynical, I'm saying they don't end up training students for jobs that exist in New York because they do want that money. They don't want to give it away. So ideally the incentives line up where we know that we want to educate people here in New York, and we want to give them jobs in New York so that they pay taxes in New York, so they repay to us the investment we've made in them by lifting the overall educated job market in New York. What hopefully doesn't happen is they say, come here, it's free tuition, more people will stay in New York to go to school. If I'm cynical, I say they don't give them the training for the kind of jobs that exist there so that you have to go out of state. Now you're on the hook for $48,000.
You know, sorry to interrupt you. Just one quick response to the whole thing about revenue for the state. If you're so concerned about revenue for the state, maybe we should focus on the wealthiest people living in your state who get away with paying very little in taxes because of all these loopholes, right? There's a lot of wealth in New York. Going after, the neediest individuals with regressive taxes is not the way to do it.
Yeah. Also, Excelsior, I believe, is the motto of New York. It's the Empire State, and their motto is Excelsior. which is
Arrival. I like the way that you say it. It kind of makes me in favor of it just because you say it that way.
I think Stan Lee's motto. Really?
Yes.
It's New York.
Excelsior.
I feel like New York and LA or in California are the only ones with exclamation points in their motto.
Eureka! Just,
Eureka! Excelsior.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Interesting. Okay.
I'm not sure if that's true. It seemed true from my vague remembrance of state
give
reports.
Give me liberty or give me death.
The Beehive State? I don't know.
All right. One more college related story because we have to do it. And it's driving me nuts. Betsy DeVos has done away with protections for student loan borrowers. And these were protections that were created under the Obama administration. And they essentially specifically focused on debt collectors and protecting students from these collectors who might have misled these students or harassed these students in ways that were not beneficial to them or the government. Now, Betsy DeVos decided, I'm gonna do away with these protections, and she didn't really give a real explanation for why, and she also doesn't have any type of replacement to protect those students. But before we get into the details of that, I do wanna give you some more context into this issue. Now, right now, there is a pretty big lawsuit against an organization known as Navient. Navient was a consumer financial, I'm sorry, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is going after them because of the way they were dealing with students who had student loan debt. The government believes that they were intentionally misleading students in such a way to maximize the organization's profits while basically burdening these students with even more debt. So let me give you the details about that. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and state attorneys general in Illinois and Washington filed lawsuits against Navient, the nation's largest servicer of student loans, accusing it of extensive mistakes and violations. So apparently they systematically deterred its customers from enrolling in income-based plans by instead steering them toward other options that were simpler for the company, and this is according to the lawsuits. Borrowers with multiple forbearances ended up owing an additional $4 billion in interest as a result of this, okay? So again, burdening these students with even more debt as a result of all this interest. Also obscuring renewal deadlines for borrowers enrolled in income-based repayment plans. Every year they would have to reapply, and so they would hide the date that they would have to reapply by, so they would lose the ability to pay back under this income-based program. Also, from July 2011 until March of 2015, some 60% of Navient's customers did not renew on time because they were misled and not told when they were supposed to renew. When borrowers sent in lump sum payments with instructions to pay off a specific loan, Navient sometimes instead divided the payment among all of the loans in the borrower's account, the Consumer Bureau said. Now understand why they did that. They didn't want you to pay off your loan, okay? That's not in their best interest. They want to maximize profits. So what they do is they divide it among all of the loans that you might have. That way you don't close one specific loan the way that you instructed them to do. Also, borrowers are usually allowed to release their cosigners after a minimum number of on-time payments have been made, but Navient created obstacles that made releases deceptively difficult to obtain. Pioneer Credit Recovery, Navient's debt collection subsidiary, systematically misled borrowers about the positive effects that rehabilitation would have on their credit reports and overpromised on how much of the defaulted loans collection fees would be forgiven. So all of this stuff is going on. They're facing a lawsuit. The Obama administration was very much aware that debt collectors and those who service student loans were taking advantage of students. So he created certain regulations, certain guidelines to ensure that this type of behavior stops, right? And so just to quickly outline what that meant, he wanted them to spend less time on debt collection. He wanted to help students find better ways to manage their debt. And he also didn't want these organizations to mislead the borrowers. Well, Betsy DeVos comes in and she's like, nope, doing away with all of that. Don't like it, done. Okay, that's what happened. And no explanation, she just thinks that it's ineffective. But ineffective how? Won't elaborate on it, won't provide any type of replacement idea or plan to protect students.
Yeah, it's like my math teacher used to say, show your work, Betsy. Like, you have all these conclusions, but I need to see your justification for it. And the reason that I don't see her work is because it just makes so much sense which decision she's made. And in these, you know, ideally in the student loan department, the investment is in the student. Unfortunately, it seems the decision has been the investment is in interest payments on the loan.
Yes.
Their investment is not being treated like an investment in our future, an investment in educating Americans, which is something that I hear on the campaign trail all the time. We need to invest money in education, and if not invest money in education, at least find some magic formula to fulfill the promise of, like, we need our people to get better jobs. We need there to be better jobs, and we need to be better trained. So we are fulfilling this in the wrong way. We're using the eventual goal of the job as a way to milk money out of people who are chasing this carrot they'll never be able to have the income to support getting.
Navient had an interesting quote in retaliation to that lawsuit, which is, there is no expectation that the servicer will act in the interest of the consumer. And I think that says it all. It's saying we're not on your side, 100%. And I think that is exactly what Betsy DeVos has said in here. I value corporations over you, people. I do not care about your education. I care about running this like a company, which it isn't. And if it were, you wouldn't be the one who's profiting.
Betsy DeVos is Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side.
I've never seen that movie.
It's just like this weird, oblivious, I'm doing the right thing. I don't know why.
No.
If you think about The Blind Side, not what you think about The Blind Side.
No.
But just like, I'm doing it well. She's Reese Witherspoon in The Big Little Lies. Just this misguided, I think you are completely
mischaracterizing her. Betsy DeVos knows what she's doing. She is not oblivious. She is very friendly to corporations because she comes from that world. She has no interest in protecting the little guy. You've seen what she did with charter schools in Michigan, you know, moving toward privatizing education there. And look, when we were talking about Betsy DeVos previously, a lot of the fear was about what she would do to public grade schools, right? But as in her position as education secretary, she actually doesn't have much impact on public grade schools. That's really left to the states. What she does have a huge impact on is colleges. And that is a huge, huge problem considering the fact that we're straddled with $1.3 trillion in student loan debt right now.
Yeah.
It continues to get worse with more and more students defaulting. And Obama did something relatively small to help protect students, and she did away with it for no reason other than to protect these corporations that continuously take advantage of them. And let me be clear about another thing, okay? She is very, very friendly with for-profit colleges, and she will also ensure that the types of regulations that for-profit colleges had to abide by are no longer in existence. So this whole notion of gainful employment doesn't care about that. Gainful employment ensures that, you know, if a for-profit college is getting government money in the form of student loans, well, they have to prove that at least some portion of their students are able to graduate and become gainfully employed after they graduate, right? Because a lot of these schools are just scams and they have no interest in educating them. A lot of them aren't even accredited. And whatever, she thinks that those regulations are crazy. She thinks that taxpayer money should go toward these scam schools.
Right. Well, the idea being that, I mean, their justification is the student should look around and choose that college that they think is going to provide the best education. What she doesn't understand is, like, yeah, these are students. They're by definition stupid because we're teaching them stuff.
Right.
They don't, they're in school, and you know, they're in school.
I wouldn't say they're stupid.
No, 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 but like that's
just a
joke.
I would say they're the most vulnerable when it comes to these scam institutions.
Right. So ideally you would make it so that they have full information, but when all of these lawsuits you see bubbling up are that students are being misled. Betsy, that should be your job. Instead of being focused on ensuring that a certain percentage of people graduate with jobs, instead the only numbers that they really want to service are the increasing the fact that 70% of students who graduate in 2016 will have loan debts, and the average debt being $37,172.
One of the quotes she said in here had the phrase customer service in it, which is not how you should be looking at this at all. It's not a funnel to make some sort of profit. And you know, like you said earlier, the point of education is to lift people up in order to lift up our society as a whole. When you're doing this, what is the goddamn point?
Right, that's exactly right. Right. One final part that I do want to make sure the audience knows about is this. Okay, let's go to graphic 19. This is according to Bloomberg. DeVos's move comes a week after one of the student loan industry's main lobbies asked for Congress's help in delaying or substantially changing the education department's loan servicing plans. Make no mistake, she knows exactly what she's doing. She is the epitome of a corrupt individual who is always on the side of the corporations and the wealthy. She is easily swayed by these lobbies. And this whole notion that someone like Donald Trump would drain the swamp, there is like swamp monster after swamp monster in that swamp. And it's all because of Trump. She is the epitome of that. And she has no interest in protecting students. She never has and never will. Anyway, we gotta take a break.
Let's do it.
We'll be back with more stuff.
Now that we're all cranky.
I'm cranky.
Welcome back to TYT. Brett Ehrlich, Kim Horcher, and Anna Kasparian with you. I do want to make a quick announcement before I read a few TYT lives. So let's bring the graphic up because there was an awesome master graphic during the Betsy DeVos story that features artwork from Robbie Canal. He is a street artist, for those of you who aren't familiar with him.
I was going to ask.
It's actually
terrifying.
Kind of amazing because I was impressed with that, but I was so infuriated by the story that I forgot to mention how much I love the graphic. And I actually didn't even know until the break that Robbie Canal was the artist behind it. He will be featured on a TYT Underground episode, so make sure you guys check that out. And Robbie, thank you so much for letting us use the image. I love it.
Yeah, because when I look over at Kim, she's right over your shoulder being like, what are you talking about?
Anna, yeah. From behind her. Oh, me too.
Well, she's definitely eating my good mood.
Earlier, there was a graphic where Trump was eating a piece of cake.
But was it a beautiful cake?
It was a
what flavor was it?
That was the thing that we were saying in the
booth.
What
kind of cake? It's
chocolate
important.
Cake. Oh. It was chocolate cake, and you know that like all his like boss, his staffers were like, we'll wait till he has cake because then he'll be happy, and then we'll go tell him. But it did look like JR was sitting on the plate, like Trump was like, he looks delicious.
That's a nice slice of chocolate cake.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, so some TYT lives for you. I love Ruth Iverson's tweet because I think a lot of people can relate to this. She says, all this money on prisons and war, and we don't spend a dime on our own people. This is why I don't like taxes. So a lot of people, I think, are against taxes because they just think of it as government waste, right? Like they don't see their tax dollars working for them. And that's the reason why I get frustrated too. I don't mind paying taxes, but I want the money to go toward creating opportunities or at least maintaining the same opportunities I had when I was growing up, right? Like I care about the future of the country. I care about people and I want them to succeed, right? And if you care about all the things that you pretend to care about, I'm talking to Republicans, like the economy, for instance, you're not gonna have a sound economic future if you saddle all these people with an insane amount of student loan debt. You're just not.
Right. I'm with you, unless the tax money goes to buying beautiful bombs. Gorgeous.
Yeah. Are they beautiful though?
Gorgeous, beautiful bombs.
What flavor are
they? We should ask Brian Williams
chocolate.
If they're beautiful.
Like, I love Brian Williams.
Brian Williams.
He's just so like, such a vapid egotist.
I love Brian Williams' daughter.
Yeah, me too.
She's
Marnie.
Marnie's great. That's not her name. It's Allison Williams, but she's great. She is great. Okay, so moving on. The anti-troll says, our government is so corrupt and it really bums me out. Knowledge is power, but also depressing. Knowledge is power. And I think that certain members of our government know that. And it is in their best interest to keep people ignorant.
Yeah,
that's why we have this massive anti-intellectualism push.
Yeah, totally.
Completely removing pages from the White House website or from public agencies that are based on facts that are provable.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no reason.
And there's a broader issue where you have American citizens flat out rejecting education because they've bought into the notion that being educated and equipping yourself with knowledge is elitist. And we saw it during the last election where anyone who had a college education was somehow immediately elitist. And no, you're doing the bidding of the worst politicians. You're buying into this notion that it's a bad thing. They want to keep you dumb. You don't want that. Don't buy into that.
I know a lot of smart idiots, but at least, you know, through study, they can find out that they're smart idiots. You don't have to. I get that point. I know a lot of like elitist intellectuals who just think that they're better than you because they've read stuff. But like, there is a value to doing research, and that is just saying that someone is dumb because they're smart is not an argument.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, we have a lot to get to, so let's get to some more stories. The White House, of course, has named its new drug czar. They're not going to keep the same drug czar under the Obama administration. And this individual has been a hardliner when it comes to the war on drugs and criminalizing individuals who are addicted to drugs. It's Representative Tom Marino, and he has a pretty questionable voting record in Congress pertaining to the criminalization of drugs like marijuana. Now, Marino's congressional voting record is that of a hardliner on marijuana issues. And he recently said that he'd like to put nonviolent drug offenders in some sort of hospital/prison. Marino also voted multiple times against a bipartisan measure to prevent the Justice Department from going after state legal medical marijuana businesses. Now, I have more about his voting record in just a minute, but I do want to note that Jeff Sessions is also very much against treating drug addicts as individuals who need rehabilitation as opposed to criminalization. And so you couple those two together and we might be in for a world of trouble, especially when we're dealing with a heroin epidemic in the country right now.
I have a question.
Sure. Go for it.
Why would we put a drug user in a hospital?
So the idea being under the Obama administration that we are trying not to criminalize it as much, because it's more beneficial, according to certain schools of thought, to treat drug addiction and abuse as a medical thing.
But drug users aren't the same as drug abusers.
Right. So
this is a massive waste of time and money and medical expertise.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it is just such a weird misunderstanding of everything that if you're the czar, you should kind of research.
You made such a good point, Kim, because I think even liberals would hear your question and it would raise red flags because no, but people need help. They need rehabilitation. And some people do. Those who are addicted, those who abuse the drugs do need rehabilitation. But there are some individuals who might casually or recreationally use drugs like marijuana, for instance. I know someone that I've studied very extensively on this issue. She likes to partake in the occasional doobie after work. And she's not necessarily an individual who needs to be in a hospital for rehabilitation because she smokes marijuana or consumes marijuana or enjoys marijuana. So I like that you made that clarification. It's important. Now, I'm going to give you some more information about Mr. Marino. He voted against a measure to allow Veterans Affairs doctors to recommend medical marijuana to their patients, as well as against a separate measure to loosen federal restrictions on hemp, a non-psychoactive variant of the cannabis plant with potential industrial implications. He also voted against a measure that would loosen some restrictions on CBD oil, again, a non-psychoactive derivative of the cannabis plant that holds promise for treating severe forms of childhood epilepsy. So why is he, especially when you consider the fact that even conservatives, Republicans, are now opening their minds up to the notion of, hey, let's not criminalize these people, let's rehabilitate them. Hey, maybe marijuana has medicinal potential, let's focus on that. No, why? Why is he so in favor of criminalizing people or doing away with any type of policy that would legalize marijuana for medicinal use? Well, if you look at his donors, pharmaceutical companies, there's pharmaceutical companies everywhere, right? So let's look at National Community Pharmacists Association, a so-called nonprofit. In 2016, they gave his campaign $10,000. 2014, $7,000. Sanofi Pharmaceutical Company, 2016, $10,000. 2014, $10,000. Drug wholesale company, AmerisourceBergen, 2016, $7,500, 2014, $5,500. His top donors are pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, and he's on the record as saying, the only way I would agree to consider legalizing marijuana is if we had a really in-depth medical scientific study, research them. And then this is where it really gets annoying, especially in light of what you just said. If it does help people one way or another, then produce it in pill form. I think it's a states' rights issue, but produce it in pill form. That's what's so frustrating to people who you're just against. I get it. He's decided that if you can make a gummy out of it, it's not a real bit of medicine. But this is proof that he's trying to funnel it towards the pharmaceutical industry so that it's something that grows like a weed.
Well, and we also know that the DEA just recently gave like the green light to a synthetic form of marijuana that has all of these terrible side effects because it's not the natural form of marijuana. It's a synthetic chemical, right? They gave that the green light. Because it's produced by pharmaceutical companies and you can't grow it in your backyard. Right, but marijuana continues to be a Schedule I drug.
And what they need to understand is there is so much drug abuse around drugs that come in pill form. He has these archaic understandings of what is right and what is wrong and has stuck his head in the sand because his companies profit when folks create a racket out of pharmaceutical products.
And by the way, let me just clarify, when I said FDA, not the DEA, DEA is not in charge of policies. Yeah, so just making sure you guys know that.
I love the hospital / prison.
Right, because
that's such a strange thing to come up with. And it just makes no sense why you would stick a hospital in there of all things, except maybe someone who would profit off of a hospital operating, even if it didn't need to run.
Well, that's it. It's like, oh, let me combine the two industries that make so much money if you privatize them, the hospital industry, the medical, the healthcare industry, and the prison industry.
Yeah.
And no one wants to go to a hospital / prison that's like, oh, do you want to check into a hotel / dungeon? Like, so come on.
It's crazy. And look, the Obama administration was not perfect when it came to drug policy, but they at least move the country toward decriminalizing people who use drugs, and they stopped using the phrase war on drugs, which is so clownish, right? And so, unfortunately, I feel like this current administration is going to roll back any progress we've made, and it's scary. It really is, especially when you consider the number of people who could stand to benefit from the medicinal potential of marijuana and the number of people who have had their lives literally destroyed over the criminalization of drugs like marijuana.
Right. If you get into the system at an early age, and frequently it's through something like possession because it's an easy thing to roll up on some kids and see, like, empty your pockets. Let me take these kids who are on the corner and put them into the system, into juvie. The recidivism rate is so insane. And for those kids to be in there early for something that, I mean, why wouldn't we change the law, especially if there's not as much of a provable negative connotation to marijuana possession? If we don't get them in the system from the beginning, maybe they stand a chance.
Yeah. You know, during the postgame show today, I want to talk to Brett about a debate we had regarding marijuana legalization a couple of years ago.
You know, I talked to someone recently, a psychiatrist, who was talking about, like, he said, marijuana's fine, but he says that there is some research out there about its ability, like triggering of psychosis.
We'll talk about it in the postgame. Okay. Yeah, right. I think it'll be an interesting conversation. So if you're a member, stick around for that. If you're not, you can join by going to tytnetwork.com/join. All right, moving on. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit against Maplewood, Missouri. This is a suburb of St. Louis that evicted a woman from her home because she called the cops too many times on her abusive husband. The victim here is Rosetta Watson. She is a disabled black woman who had, not an abusive husband, an abusive boyfriend. And so as a result, she called the cops 4 times. And the community felt that it was so much of a nuisance that they needed to banish her from the community for 6 months. Now, on 4 occasions between 2011 and 2012, she contacted local law enforcement telling authorities that Robert Hennings hit, shoved, and choked her. She was evicted and forced to leave town for 6 months. Under a local ordinance, more than 2 calls to the cops regarding domestic violence within 180 days qualifies as a nuisance. Individuals who violate the rule can be evicted and lose their occupancy permit, which is required to live in the city for 6 months. This is insane. And I'm glad the ACLU is getting involved in fighting this. And believe it or not, Maplewood, Missouri is not the only community that has this type of nuisance regulation. And so this is something that needs to change, especially because the victim here is a woman who's being abused by her ex-boyfriend. And you are now sending a message to domestic abuse victims that if they have the audacity to call the cops for help, which by the way could save their lives, well, you know, they're bothering people in the community and they don't like that. So they can get rid of you and then you can lose your home. She lost her Section 8 voucher as a result of this and ended up homeless. Okay, that's what this community did to her. It's insane. They just victimized the victim.
It's such a weird law.
It seems like it also said in here, her repeated calls about domestic violence had put Maplewood police officers at risk.
What
is this everyone's problem except for the perpetrator?
How were the cops at risk?
Well, domestic violence is the most is among the more dangerous calls to receive and respond to as a police officer. Yes, okay, good. Let's take the proper precautions when approaching a domestic violence case. But it seems like our priority should be, in this case, exactly as you pointed out, the person who's getting beat up is our priority.
Yeah.
I understand if we have nuisance laws, too many calls to the cops, we should erroneous calls to the cops. If you are calling in something that didn't happen, you're being a nuisance because you're taking away resources when the cops should be responding to real concerns, like an actual domestic violence case like this one where she got stabbed in the legs.
Yeah, so let's get to that, because after she got stabbed in the legs, she was afraid to call the cops because of this community and the ramifications of having the audacity to ask for help. She lost her Section 8 housing voucher. Without it, she couldn't find affordable housing and ended up on the streets for a period of time. She eventually moved to St. Louis, but when her ex-boyfriend abused her again, this time stabbing her in the leg, she was too frightened to call the cops and instead went to the hospital by herself. The hospital called police. Hennings was charged, pleaded guilty to domestic assault in the third degree, and was sentenced to incarceration. He died in 2013. So look, he was found guilty. This guy was abusive. It's not like she was making a big deal out of nothing. He was threatening her life and physically harming her, and she needed help. And this community did the exact opposite of that. They created a situation where she was afraid to ask for help. This is insane. And apparently there are ordinances that are similar to this in over 30 states. That's according to Sandra Park. She's a senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. Wow.
It seems like it was made just to like get rid of people that you don't like or people who might be considered a problem and you're just tired of it, instead of solving actual problems. Let's just move the problem and make it someone else's issue.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and if you have quotas, you know, trying to lower crime in your area, especially there's a high, you know, if you're in an abusive relationship, that probably won't stop after one incident. It is just the worst kind of nefarious to say, well, let's just move her problem elsewhere. And like to add insult to injury, the calling this a nuisance law, like what a crappy word. Nuisances are like loud music,
someone who's stomping on the top floor and bothering someone underneath.
Yes.
On a lower floor, like that's a nuisance.
It was such a nuisance when you got stabbed.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Oh my God. Well, that you're telling me you got stabbed. For me, it was hard for me when you got stabbed.
I hope that in the end, with the help of the ACLU, there will be justice for the victim here. I feel so terrible for Rosette Watson and all the other women who have had to deal with similar nuisance regulations in their communities. But one final thing I want to say, and it's a broader point about certain communities or even certain buildings that have HOAs that have nuisance regulations. Look, life is a nuisance. Okay, every single day is a gigantic nuisance. You deal with nuisance every time you step out the door. You deal with nuisance when you come home. Nuisances exist because there are people around us all day, every day. And guess what? That's just life. So just deal with it. Like, people expect everything to be so easy. No, it's not easy because other humans exist. It's not just about you. So I get it. Sometimes music's loud. I get it. Sometimes people do things that they're not supposed to do, and we should minimize that as much as possible, right? But sometimes you're going to have to deal with neighbors who are having conflicts and they need to get cops involved. Why is that a nuisance? How about you shut your door or you shut your window and you shut the fuck up? How about that? Okay, if that's a nuisance to you, imagine what that woman is dealing with when her ex-boyfriend is beating the shit out of her.
Tell him.
Fuck. These types of regulations are a nuisance, okay? How about that?
It's just when, it's just when the law isn't doing what it was intended to do, and then people shittily take advantage of that so that they don't have to like respond to a domestic violence case.
It's crazy.
Ugh, let's talk about Miley Cyrus's butt.
Yes, let's do it. I almost kind of want you to present this story.
What?
I feel like you'd do more justice. Anyway.
No, it'll sound way pervier for me.
All right. A couple of years ago, there was a leak that included pictures of celebrities in various states of undress. Now, that was a terrible story. Apparently, the Apple Cloud had been hacked by either one person or a group of individuals. But nonetheless, the damage was done and there were a number of victims. Well, fast forward to present day, and it turns out that there's been another hacking. And as a result, a number of female celebrities have had their personal photos leaked to the press. We're not going to show you those photos. It's a disgusting violation of privacy. But some of the victims include Katie Cassidy, Miley Cyrus, Rosario Dawson, Demi Lovato, Dylan Penn, and also Amanda Seyfried. This is going to continue happening, and people make justifications for it. And think about how you would feel. If you think that those justifications are warranted, think about how you would feel if people violated your privacy, either hacked into your accounts or broke into your home, got these personal images, and then published it for the entire world to see. It's just gross.
Right. And there's the original one was called the Fappening. This is called the Fappening 2.0. Mm-hmm. There's a website called Celeb Jihad that's behind it and has no problems posting this kind of stuff and then tries to run away and avoid anyone pinning down any individual when it comes to culpability around this kind of action. Things that make me angry when I hear them are when folks say as a response, well, why are you taking naked pictures in the first place? The answer being they're of me and they were on my phone and I sent them maybe to people that I wanted to see them and no one else. It was like, that's like saying, why do you have money in your house? Well, it's my house. I want to keep it there. I need it for stuff. Who gives a fuck? Stay the fuck out of my business.
That's like saying, why did you park your car on the street? It wouldn't have been stolen by some carjacker or whatever. Like, it's ridiculous, okay?
Yeah.
Just because someone is doing something, let's say taking a nude photo for their significant other, doesn't mean that that gives a hacker all the entitlement in the world to hack into their accounts and steal that personal image and then post it all over the internet.
It's like this moral line that they feel justified in breaking in after. Like it says, she's naked in a sauna, kill scandal, wearing overalls while topless. Who cares? It's for her. It was never meant for you. It's like if you were urinating at a urinal, some guy stuck his face into your dick and started talking about it. It's like, I didn't tell you to do that.
That does happen all the time.
Or if someone took a photo of it, right? And posted it all over the internet, you felt violated and people responded to you with, well, why were you urinating in a public bathroom?
Had to go, had too much to drink. That's the answer to that question.
That's wrong of you.
Another question I have is like, there are way more dick pics out there than there are boob photos. I know there's two boobs per boob photo and one penis per dick pic. But still, I think guys take more dick pics. Is sadly intuitive is like, they're like, where are all the guy wiener pics? Nowhere. I got one Orlando Bloom. I got one Justin Bieber, but that's it. That's because I've narrowed it down to guys are pervier.
No, they just feel entitled because you think right. Like this woman's in the spotlight. It's like, oh, well, she belongs to me. I'm part of the public. That's
well,
not
it's
true. Not,
what it is you want to see that, like these people want to see that naked picture. Mm-hmm. And so they find any BS reason to justify doing it. And it sucks. And it's weird. Here's another thing that I noticed is like Miley Cyrus naked. Mm-hmm. She decided earlier to take her own naked photos.
Right.
So it's out there. So what's the big deal? Why do you want to see more of them?
Right.
And she's like, you have no power here.
Well, it's
and
like,
some might argue, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead. No, you.
I mean, it's on that level of power, of like taking away her own agency when she's already used her agency to say, this is an expression. This is what I'm putting out there.
Right. And she consented to putting that expression out there. She didn't consent to having her personal images stolen and posted all over the internet. All right, guys, that does it for today's show. If you're a member, check out our postgame show where Brett and I will talk about the debate we had about marijuana legalization. And we also have a TYT Classics for our members as well. So check that out and more. TYTNetwork.com/join. We'll see you guys tomorrow if you're not a member. Ready? One, two, three.
Bye-bye.